Welcome to the Reinvest Podcast, a podcast that is based on building confidence for you to manage your personal finances and the ministry finances that you've been entrusted with. Welcome back to the Reinvest Podcast. I'm joined again today by Don Matchett and Eric Thompson. We're going to be talking through how much should we help our children financially. We kind of touched on some of this in our last podcast, but kind of picking up and going a little more in depth on, like, you know, what does our financial planning around raising kids and even past the point of, you know, the traditional 18 and you're out on your own kind of, but moving on into their adult years, you know, kind of how that all kind of plays out and kind of what we need to be thinking about as we do that. One of the things that we see a lot in the American culture is the idea of raising up a child until they're 18, they're off to school, and then them kind of coming back into the home after school. So after college, they come back in the home, and they usually stay for another maybe 5 years or so until they kind of build themselves a good portion, be out on their own. Not every family's like that. It works different here and there, but that's kind of the trend that's happening now. And kind of how that's differed for generations previous, from the ones who, you know, when they were 18 or something, they went off into the military and they never came home again. Like they went off, created their own life, and then they would come back to visit family or be close to family in a community. But then kind of how that has shifted in our culture. And so we'll kind of talk a little bit through that kind of stuff, but just kind of opening up here with the kind of what your thoughts on supporting your kids financially, how much is too much, you know, kind of what are your thoughts and kind of your viewpoints on, you know, helping your kids out?
I start with my daughter, 'cause she's the first one out of the house. But her transition from our home to her own home was when we moved to Nashville, which had been 7 years ago, I guess. And so we basically gave her the choice. She certainly could move with us. But so the process of doing that, she decided she wanted to stay where we were living there in Arkansas. So we rented a house. We stayed with her for a few months. She saved her money. And at the end of that time, she took everything over. And basically that was the bookend, mm-hmm. to her staying with us, you know. So she just kind of took responsibility at that point.
Was she already out of school at that point in time?
She was still in college. Yeah.
Can I just say, every stage of parenting has its own unique challenges.
It does.
I can tell you, when I was changing diapers, I thought that was surely going to be the hardest part of parenting. And then when my daughter became a teenager and spoke a different language for a while, or maybe I did, I'm not sure which one of us changed languages, but we certainly weren't speaking the same language for about 5 years there. I thought, boy, this has to be the hardest part of parenting. And suddenly she's a fully functioning and very responsible adult. And once again, I'm finding that parenting is challenging because now it has become almost a mentoring role, mm-hmm. where I don't interject into her. And yet I have to be aware of those moments when she needs me, one, to speak into her life. And then there are those occasions where I need to help her financially or physically. And, but it's different. And I think that's when I think about finances, I approach it the same way. It's not a day in, day out, hour by hour thing,
right.
anymore.
Right.
But there are times when we can carefully interject financially in a way that's strategically helpful. And again, I learned this from my parents. When I got out of college and got married, I actually got married before I got out of college, but as a newlywed, you know, we lived for Tuesday nights because at that time the cheeseburgers were a quarter. at McDonald's, and we would go, and that was, you know, the highlight of our week because we could afford it. And times were really tight for a while. And my mom and dad had this incredible knack of, you know, they didn't just send us money all the time, but every once in a while, and invariably it was at the perfect moment, they would send us just enough to help us get over that next little speed bump financially. And I remember they gave us a car, and they had no idea when they called to tell us our car had just died the day before, you know? And so we've tried to do those types of things to not, again, struggle is good.
Right.
But to be there at the right moment and to pick our times to help.
Right. And I think that, like, you telling your story just then was bringing back memories for me of, you know, times where it was, I didn't ask for it, but, you know, mom or dad were like, oh, here, I got this, or, you know, no, nah, I'll do this, don't worry about it, stuff. And that has even trickled down into my daily life, to where it's like, I'll do that for my brothers and my sisters, where it's just like, don't worry about it, I got it, and stuff. Just to, it's not that they need it and stuff, but it's just, I care about you enough to do this, and you don't owe me anything for it. And I think that's that community of, you know, the relationship you have with your family and stuff like that, to where it's like, I care about you, and I'm willing to sacrifice something I have to do that. And those little things, it doesn't have to be extravagant. Those little things show that you care and show that you're, you know, I'm invested in your life and I'm here for you, kind of things.
I think there's another factor here, though, that when you have a child, an adult child who gets married, there's another whole side. I mean, you're marrying into a family, so you have their in-laws, and you know, they play such a vital role in their lives as well. And so, as an example, my daughter, she married into a great family. You know, he's a deacon in a church, and her father-in-law's a deacon in the church there, and they have been a great source for them as well. So it's kind of a, you know, a family thing for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that is you don't want it to become a competition between the in-laws. I know that sometimes is the stereotype that you get into. It's like, well, you let them do this, well, I need to do this and stuff. And it doesn't need to be like that. You know, if someone has the resources, or maybe they have a contact or something like that that's able to do something and help, don't view that as competition, or that you need to one up them on something. Just view that as a thank you for blessing my child, and take it from there. But don't end up being like, well, if they did that, if they gave you a car, then I need to give you a boat or something like that. So
For us, it's a little bit outside of that, because our kids, my son-in-law and my daughter, they are very self-sufficient. So a lot of times conversations that I'm having with the Rooks, which is, you know, my daughter's in-laws, is, okay, so how can we help them? Because they're not going to tell us what they need, you know? So we're sneaking around on the outside and around them, trying to figure out how we can help them, you know?
And I think that's very good that your kids are self-sufficient, because that shows that it's like, you know, I take ownership of what my decisions were and stuff, and I'm not looking for, I can do whatever I want and mom and dad will bail me out. And that's a good testament of how they were raised and what their priorities are.
Yeah. Well, and I think another part of this support system that we're talking about, I think about the process. You know, after they got married, we had conversations about, okay, now, maybe we shouldn't have, maybe we should talk to them first. I don't know, but we're talking to each other. All right. So what about the car insurance? You know, what about, you know, the health insurance and those sorts of things? If you guys will do this, we'll do that. You know, and then how do we gradually start weaning them off of those things? And they want to become even more self-sufficient. I think it's vital that, you know, you have a good relationship with the in-laws, so to speak.
Well, you at least definitely need to have conversations with your in-laws. And so it is not, well, we're doing this and we're doing this and we're doing this, but that you don't even account for them in the equation. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's their baby too. They want to take care of and stuff, and they get joy just like everybody else does of taking care of your kids and stuff like that. So I think it's important to have that conversation. You know, one of the things that we see a lot when we're talking about helping our kids financially is like how much of a head start to give them. Some people talk through like 529 plans of saving for college, or the trust accounts that you set up for them so that they take ownership when they're 21 or 25 or however you want to set them up. And kind of, you know, what kind of financial outlook do you kind of want to put on them, you know, even at a young age, to be able to give them something to get started with? You know, for our boys, we've done some trust accounts for them, like the day they were, well, not the day they were born, but, you know, very soon after they were born, to get it kind of set up for custodian accounts to be able to have for them whenever they get older, to be able to pay for things like college or down payment on house or something like that, that is costing me very little in the year to year. But once they get to their 18-year-old, or their, I think both of mine are like 25, but when they get to their 25th birthday and they take ownership of that, then it'll be a more significant amount of money for them. In that kind of thought process, I'm very particular on making sure I teach them how to read the investments, how to do that kind of stuff, and which both of my boys are very small, and so I'm not having those conversations yet. That's just the plan as they get older to talk about that.
I'm sure they'll be very enthusiastic about that, John.
Well, I will tell you that my four-year-old has already told me that whenever he gets older, he's going to work teaching people about money, and I'm going to work for him. So he's already got the bug, so we'll see how it goes.
I think one of the areas that we don't think about are the small things. I've been amazed in parenting adults, the things that we don't even think about. You know, what types of insurance should I have? You know, how do I fill out these forms from the government? This is terrible. You know, all the things that you know, we've been doing it a while now, and as older adults, it's just run of the mill day to day.
Taxes are a huge thing.
Huge, absolutely. And the beautiful thing about those little day to day things that you help with, it opens the door to talk about strategy and about thinking long term about saving, investing. It also gives you a window into ways you can help. Because when you're helping fill out forms, you see a lot of things. And I think we have to embrace, first of all, any chance you get to spend with adult children and still help them and feel like you're needed, take it, you know, because these are incredible kids, and they're amazing people in their own right. And it's truly a privilege to get to serve them in some way. And I think we take full advantage of that and then use those moments to build on and speak into their lives.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a huge change from these are the people that live in my house every day to now I very rarely get to see you. And so I'm already dreading it, and I've got a long way to go still yet. But I imagine that those times are precious whenever it comes to getting to spend time with them and help them and actually get to be a parent again.
Well, you know, there was a time, it hasn't been that long ago. I remember one of my cousins, he was told from a very young age at 18, you know, we love you, but you got to leave, you know, and it is different now. You know, my son's 18 now, and I'm not very good in that regard, because I would have been okay with my kids if they just stayed with me forever. You know? So I may not be the best model, but it is different, you know, in that regard.
Well, and I see a lot of the kids that go off to college, they have big plans, but I will tell you that this generation that's coming into the workforce now, Gen Z, they look at things differently than even the millennials or the Gen Xers did as they're coming out to where they're looking at, this is a huge debt load that we're going to have. And so coming back to mom and dad's where I can pay down some of my debt, I can try to get a better head start and stuff. Because, you know, when the boomers and Gen X went to college, college was expensive, but it wasn't like it is now. And now they're coming out of college with, you know, I think the average is around $60,000 or $70,000 of debt that they're coming out with. And that's, there's some that have way more than that. And so it's kind of, how do you,
that's a mortgage.
Yeah. And then they have to get a mortgage on top of that,
get a mortgage,
a car payment or something like that. And so, and that's all before you actually get a job that is in your career. And so kind of thinking through like how you see kids coming back home and they're staying with their parents longer because that's a place where they can stay. Mom and dad's not necessarily charging them rent. If they are charging them rent, it's not what they would have to pay if they were out in an apartment complex. But kind of helping to get their feet back underneath them and stuff like that. I don't know that I really necessarily have an answer for like, how do you come out of college without debt and stuff like that? Because you can work, but you know, you basically have to work full-time job to be able to pay for school now. But kind of how that plays into what's it look like on your family side when they're coming back in, what kind of structures and stuff do you want to put in place? And this may not be necessarily what happened in your guys' home, but just kind of from your experiences, what you kind of see happening, like with friends and other people that, you know, are in the same kind of situation where their kids have come back in, you know, is it pay rent? Is it just come and live and we'll help you get back on your feet? Is it a combination of those? You know, kind of what are you guys' thoughts on those things?
Well, I'm not in that situation, but I think if my kids were to come back again, I wouldn't be very good at this about charging rent. You know, I think I would be okay if they just lived with us, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that's the responsible thing to do.
Well, and I don't think that there's a right or wrong in this.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we, when people say like, how much is too much to help your kids? One of the first things I'd be like is, what can you afford? You know, if it's going to make it so that you're not able to, you know, do the things that you need to do for your future. And that's the big thing we talk about is making sure that, you know, one of the big things that's hit in social media and stuff now is talking about self-care. You want to take care of yourself so you can then take care of other people and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's become very buzzwordy, trendy right now. Well, the same thing happens with your finances. You kind of have to take care of your personal stuff and not just like your current day-to-day, but you know that you're going to get older. You know you're going to be in retirement. Are you taking care of that kind of stuff before you start helping with the kids and kind of how that kind of plays out? Because if not, and I know it sounds terrible that you're wanting to put back money for yourself before you help your kids, but if you don't, then who's going to take care of you in old age? It's going to be your kids, and you're just creating another financial burden for them that you're trying to help them out of right now. And so it's like you're just delaying when you're going to put them that in that financial burden. And so kind of thinking through that as we're talking about how we're helping our kids and kind of, are you just delaying the financial burden or are you actually helping the kids as you kind of go through that?
You know, I keep picturing in my mind when we're talking specifically about this transition from adolescence into early adulthood into full-fledged functioning adulthood. I don't know if you've ever seen a butterfly or a moth come out
several
of a cocoon. But yeah, okay, come out of their cocoon where they have to break out. It is excruciating. Mm-hmm. And but I mean, all of us went to high school science class. We know if you help that little insect and try to break the cocoon, that you will stun it and it'll never be able to fly correctly.
Right.
Because it's the actual struggle of coming out of that cocoon,
right,
that creates the strength to fly. I have no problem with adult children coming back. as long as it doesn't become a trap, mm-hmm. as long as it doesn't become the comfortable cocoon where they never emerge
right.
as fully independent adults. And so I think, and our daughter, we had no trouble with this because she was about to get married when she returned home for a while, and she could not wait to get out of our house for obvious reasons. Right. She was ready to go start her own life. But we talked throughout her college years, we talked openly with her about the fact that we wanted her to move forward into independence, not that we wanted to get rid of her. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the longest 12 hours between Nashville, Tennessee and Ardmore, Oklahoma. And I really do mean that. They are really long miles, especially once you get to the Texas area. But I would not have her here trapped in a comfortable cocoon when I know that she is out flying
right.
and doing what she was created to do. And I think we have to be careful to help without hurting when it comes to our kids spreading their wings, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think that's a very good point. I know that when it comes to my upbringing, as we came up, whenever I left home for college, I came back 2 summers. And then after that, I stopped. My sister came back until I think she came back 3 summers and then she stopped. And my brother went back and forth a few more times than that. And I think my sister stayed one summer or something after school, after she graduated. But most of us, but it wasn't like our parents were like, you're out of our house now. But it was more of, we went off to school. We liked that independence. And it kind of drove us. I think now the issue becomes very much financial in the fact that they can't move out because they can't afford, housing prices have went through the roof. And so they can't afford to just move out on their own unless they move in with 4 or 5 roommates. And then you have to have a place that's huge and, all that kind of stuff. And so it becomes more of it's not you're helping, but it may not be because they have any other choices.
Right.
And so it's kind of how do you help push them out without pushing them out and
find the balance.
You got to find that balance of, I've already talked to my wife about, our boys, and I'm fine with them staying with us until they're, old men. That's fine. It doesn't bother me at all. But I do want to create the desire for them to be on their own and to be independent and to be, fully functioning adults.
I do think it's interesting. Here in the U.S., we're currently experiencing something the rest of the world has experienced for a long time, and that's multi-generational households mm-hmm. because of the cost of living.
Right.
And we've been financially blessed that we could for many people to be able to get out and get a job and quickly be on your own. But the truth is in most parts of the world, there are many multi-generational households and they all contribute to the household in order to survive.
Yeah. In the US right now, 1 in 5 homes is multi-generational. And that's a big change from what it used to be.
Well, and there's some value in that too. Because being nostalgic just for a moment, but I remember back, whenever I was a kid, there was no daycare mm-hmm. available to us because it was community. We went to our grandparents' house and in fact, my great grandfather, from the time that I was born until I went to school, I was with him every day. And so there was this community thing where, we have grandparents that are staying at home. They'll take care of the kids. And then when they get to a certain age, then the parents are going to take care of the grandparents, mm-hmm. And it's not that way with my kids now. And I really miss that. I wish my kids had had the same experience I did with their grandparents. And, obviously my parents passed away early. And my wife's parents live in South Arkansas. It wasn't no one's fault, but I certainly miss that community. And I think it's valuable to the family.
Oh, I think it's valuable to our culture.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in East Tennessee where I grew up, people didn't move away. Like, you grew up, you got a house within probably 10, 15 miles of where your parents were, if not next door. And then you'd run down to your grandma's house or wherever and stuff, and you could walk there when you were a small child. All your aunts and uncles, all your cousins were right there close to you. I remember having family dinner nights with all of my aunts and uncles and cousins from the time I was very small up until I was in high school, and everybody's schedule got busy. But of all those family members, me and my siblings are the only ones that moved away. And so, you know, that very much is something that we see now, even in our church here in Nashville, to where you don't have the family units that you had in your small country church, that it was, you know, oh, this is my aunt, my uncle, and stuff. They all go to this church. We're all here. We have Sunday dinners together, and we know everything that's going on in their lives and stuff. But now it's like we are trying to make a community with our church people to where it's like, hey, you need a date night. We're going to watch your kids for you and stuff like that and stuff, and kind of helping that, kind of filling that gap of what a parent would be or a sibling would be to help kind of to facilitate that. You know, when we're talking about, you know, how much you help financially with your kids and stuff like that, it may be not be just your kids. It may be the kids in your family, your community, things like that, as well as being able to say, you know, we're willing to do this for you so that you can enrich and develop better in your life moving forward. So
I'm going to go back, touch on a couple of things. Eric was talking about the struggle, and I really like that analogy. Let me share my experience, how my family handled me exiting the household. So, I was working shift work, and we were living in our family farmhouse, right? And so I only saw my parents, you know, every 2 weeks or so. I was just working all the time, and they were, when I was asleep, they were working, and vice versa. And they told me that we're thinking about buying a house. Okay. And it was probably about 3 weeks later, I came home from a shift, about 3:30 in the morning or something like that, and went to the light switch, and it was off. There was no power. The house was empty. And goodbye says it all, pretty much, you know. But it was, at the time, it was devastating, you know, as you can imagine. But at this point in my life, I don't know that I'd trade that for anything, because it was a struggle. But I learned a lot really quickly,
yeah.
You know, learn how to live.
Well, and I think that's, you know, I think back of whenever I was in college and I was first out on my own and stuff. And, you know, up until that point, mom had made dentist appointments and doctor's appointments and stuff for me to go to all time stuff. And it's like, I'm here in Nashville and it's like, all right, I need to go to the dentist. Who's a good dentist? How do I find a good dentist? How do I know how my insurance works and all that kind of stuff? And so, it became a very much of adulting 101, and there's not a class for that, surprisingly. So, you know, it falls on the parents to be that class. And so being able to, you know, teach your kids and talk to your kids about, you know, this is how you pay a light bill. This is why you need light bills. Yeah. You know, this is how you make sure you're not, you know, just wasting your money on, you know, whatever. All that is one of those things where you kind of get used to it. You take it for granted. And then you don't think about, like, I should probably talk to my kid about, we have a water bill. You know, this is why we have a water bill. The city charges you to haul your trash away. You need to pay for that. That kind of stuff of just adulting and you know, this is why you need to go to the doctor, even though you don't feel sick.
You'd be surprised how many things that kids think that just happen.
Right. I was sitting here thinking, and first, my parents, my grandparents, without question, were the most influential as far as finances. But there were other adults too, and I think we have a role to play. Even those of us, you know, our kids, like we've already bragged on our kids, they're doing great, they're independent. But there are a lot of kids out there who don't have the parents. And I was thinking, just a couple of quick examples. My wife's grandfather, when we would go visit him when we were in our younger years, when we left, he always gave us a little money and a watermelon every single time. Yeah. I had a cousin, even when he couldn't afford it himself, he always gave me $50 when I left. Dr. Alton Lovelace, my first boss at Randall House, my first day he came in, said, "You have lunch plans?" I said, "No." He took me to Burger King, gave me $10, and told me to go open my retirement account and explain why it was important. I had to have $50, by the way. I showed up and I couldn't even open the account. I didn't have enough money. But he got the point across. I opened the account and I dropped off a check the next day.
Yeah, we changed that. Now you can have very little money.
Well, there you go. But and I'm not saying that just because it's border retirement. But listen, I started that. I had just turned 20.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and those, I think I put in $5 or $10 a month for years. But those things add up.
Yeah.
And I think there are so many ways that I think we need to be alert to helping, because you mentioned a really good word, community. It's a beautiful thing to be part of the body of Christ. You know, we help our kids when they're young, when they're adults, but then the incredible thing is we help others as well.
Right.
And we all plug in where we can to set the example, not only for our kids financially and to help them financially, but to help the entire next generation of believers. And in today's world of broken homes, I think that's especially important.
And I think the idea of, you know, these aren't my kids, but these are kids that I have influence over, whether it's just on Sunday morning while you're at church or, you know, because they were friends of your kids growing up, you have influence over that kid. And, you know, I think about, you know, my boys, as they bring friends home from school or from church or wherever, and those kids are going to be interacting in my home, that I have to be an example to them as well, because I want my kids to be a light to the world, and I want the kids that they run around with to be a light to the world, but somebody has to be a light to them first. And so being able to talk to them about, you know, just day-to-day, these are the things that you're going to come in contact with and things that are going to be challenges for you, as well as their spiritual upbringing of, you know, this is why we talk to God about stuff. This is why we're praying about this or whatever and stuff. I think all that is super important and, you know, very useful, especially in a world that doesn't always see that as a value.
I think another thing that we're trying to do with, especially our son is 18. He'll graduate high school in May. It's hard to believe. But, you know, I always want to be a good role model. We've talked about that, about being a good role model and setting a good example. But I'm also trying to tell Asher that his life doesn't have to look like mine, you know.
Right.
I you know, just because I have a graduate degree doesn't mean that he has to even go to college. If it's not right for him, he wants to go to trade school where he's probably going to make more money than I am. Right. You know, if he does that, it's completely okay that he needs to go his own path. And sometimes I think we as parents, we just have to say that out loud.
Yeah. And I think that is a key of being like college or trade school or whatever you decide, it needs to be your path, not this is what I wanted you to do. And so this is what I want you to do. But letting them make those choices, because like it or not, you're saddling them with the responsibility of living up to that and stuff. And so making sure that they're involved in that decision is very helpful. Well, we're coming to the end of our time. I just wanted to thank you guys again for being a part of this podcast with us. Thank you guys for listening. Again, if you want to reach out to us at reinvest.com. We're more than happy to answer questions if you have want to follow up with any of these topics. Happy to be a service to you. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Reinvest Podcast. For more information, please visit our website at reinvestfwb.com. Please subscribe to the Reinvest Podcast through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and more.